Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Greetings, Grapple fans. Welcome to episode 77 of the Pro Wrestling Index right here on the AI podcast channel. I'm joined by two guests tonight to look back on what was a huge weekend in the world of WWE. Of course, we had the NXT War Games as well as Survivor Series, so a lot to get through. First off, he's back. Yes, it's Mr. Capo Khan, a.k.a. Mo Chatra. How are you doing, Mo?
Oh, very well. The Chris Jericho of Pro Wrestling Index returns from his cruise. You found those YouTube videos of me as Capo Khan.
Oh, we did. FWA.
Yeah, I'll never live those down.
No, not after sharing them. That's it now.
Yeah, it's not how not to be a wrestling manager. If anyone wants to have a tutorial video, check out my videos.
Yes.
A long time ago, I hastened to add.
Yes, if you want to see where Paul Heyman got his ideas from, go check it out. I tease. Not just Mo, of course, Guy Drinkle's here as well, straight out of the gorilla position and into the commentary booth. How are you doing, Guy?
I'm great. This is the first time I've ever spoke to Mo on a podcast about wrestling. It's weird.
That's right, yeah. Goodness.
It's almost like an NXT call-up.
It's like Xavier Woods and Kofi Kingston. They've never tagged together in a two-man.
Does that make me Big E?
Yeah, you can be Big E.
I like it.
Shrivel those hips.
Oh. All right, anyway, let's get into it. So NXT War Games, when we done the preview, as you said, you know, on paper some of the card wasn't necessarily enticing, some storylines haven't been captivating, but we were looking forward to elements of it, and particularly obviously the whole spectacle of War Games, and intrigued by how the concept would be played out after, you know, it's been nigh on 20 years since we've seen a War Games. So I mean, on the whole, the event, it's gone down pretty well, Mo, hasn't it? And I got to say, when I sat down and watched it Sunday morning, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, the show is something that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, is one that didn't look amazing on paper, but we thought it would deliver. And come the event, it really did. I thought all of the matches were good, or really, really good. And the show did a really good job of elevating a couple of individuals, one in particular in the Velveteen Dream, who almost came out as a star of the show. Such was the strength of his performance against Aleister Black in arguably the match of the night. It's really a toss-up between that and the War Games. And that was really, really cool to see, because the Performance Center, which is obviously what NXT is based around, is something that has been criticized in certain quarters as something that hasn't really been turning out homegrown stars. It's NXT has really been somewhere where indie talents that have been around for a number of years have come in and gone on to then the main roster. But we are now seeing people that are the products of the Performance Center coming through NXT and even into the main roster. And Velveteen Dream is certainly somebody who's come through that system. And, you know, even though he had prior experience, it was very limited before becoming part of developmental. And he looks like a future superstar. He really does.
He does. What I particularly liked was the psychology in the match. It was fantastic. Great to see, you know, the faces on the tights a la Rick Rude, you know, as he did with Jake Roberts and Ultimate Warrior back in the day. But the psychology was great. And I think this is kind of maybe the evidence of where these, you know, these hardened veterans that have come off the indie circuit and now working with these guys who are coming through the Performance Center, and they're getting the benefit of their experience and their different styles. And I think, yeah, some of that is now coming out. And yeah, Velveteen Dream, for me, a star was born on Saturday night.
Oh, yeah, totally. And the great thing about him is he's only 22 years old, you know, just a young pup by the standards of the WWE, especially if you go by the standards of the main event from the next night and the Survivor Series, where people double his age, who looked well, triple his age. So, yeah, it was really good to see, and really looking forward to seeing more of him in NXT, and it's inevitable that at some point in the next 12 months, he'll end up on the main roster. For somebody who's only 3 years into his career, to be that good, you know, it shows you've got some real natural talent there. So very, very exciting to see more of this guy.
Yeah. And Guy, what about yourself? Was that the match that stood out for you from the entire event?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that kind of speaks volumes, as this was my first War Games match. So for basically not a rookie, but someone who's inexperienced on a main card, assuming that all sounds like he is inexperienced on a main card, and Aleister Black, who is a bit more experienced, but has not really been in the main event picture on NXT, for them to steal a show on what is the first War Games, and is it 30-odd years that's the first match of? It speaks
volumes. 20 years of... Yeah.
20, yeah.
Yeah, it speaks volumes of what a match that was. And I think what's the difference for me is that in a 1v1 match, you can do so much more storytelling. And this isn't a feud... that's kind of like, it's not a personal feud. It's just came about randomly about someone wanting to say someone else's name. And it's been a thing of beauty. I mean, this is the sort of thing that you don't see on Raw and SmackDown. You don't see a story. You don't see an actual story that is shown in such a perfect way. I mean, you had Aleister Black, who played his role perfectly. Velveteen Dream, 22-year-old. I mean, I don't know how you can be that good at something at 22. It's absolutely insane. But just moving on to the War Game match for me, that was like... I don't know if this... I don't know if this comparison is a bit blasphemous, but for me, it reminded me of early... Obviously, this is my first War Games. It reminded me of early Elimination Chamber match, where it is absolute carnage. And the match keeps developing as other people join. So that's what I'd compare that to for someone who hasn't seen the old style ones. And it was brilliant. It was absolute carnage. And I think the right people won it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good point as well. Yeah. It was spectacular, fun to watch and everything else. But beyond all of that, storyline wise, it made absolute sense in terms of the outcome and more. As someone who's watched previous War Games, did this one live up to expectations for yourself then?
Well, it had very, very high expectations to live up to. I mean, this is a legendary match, is the War Games. You know, it was something that was invented by Dusty Rhodes, I think, back in around 86, 87, and used on the Great American Bash Tour, and carried on as a regular feature until the early 90s, after which it was then sporadically used, normally about once a year, up until around 97-98. So, and nearly every match I saw with the War Games was excellent, amongst Match of the Year contenders normally. So this was not a Match of the Year contender, but it was still an excellent match. As I said earlier, arguably Match of the Night, had so many great moments. Superplex spot from the top of the cage was just amazing. And, it was high intensity. And what was good was that it went so long, it went nearly 37 minutes, and yet it didn't feel like it was dragging, like it felt boring at any stage. So it was well put together, well assembled, and did a really good job of putting, Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish and Adam Cole over as that kind of act. The what do they call themselves now? The
Undisputed Era.
Undisputed Era, there you go. And it also helped, I suppose, that Kevin Owens was there at ringside wearing their T-shirt. So that was good to see, because these are talented guys. They still lack a bit of character. They seem a bit vanilla. So I think they certainly, Fish and O'Reilly, need to work on that side of their game. Cole's certainly got more charisma. Got a little bit of Shawn Michaels about him, at least facially in terms of resemblance. These are clearly three people on the roster that the company has big plans for going into 2018. So it was good to see them put over strong in this match. And again, like with Velveteen Dream, elevated individuals that will be focal points for NXT over the next 12 months.
And come back to you then, Guy. Just finally on the NXT takeover, then the two, I'd say, title changes. I mean, obviously one was the women's title was vacant, but Ember Moon crowned as women's champion, and the title change on the main one with Andrade Almas beating Drew McIntyre. Thoughts briefly on them two matches?
I thought the NXT Championship match was actually quite good. I mean, it started off a bit slow, but I think it really grew into it, which is quite an achievement, seeing as Drew did his bicep, was it? I think he did. in terms of the outcome, I think obviously the big surprise was Almas winning, but I think that's kind of just to allow that feud to breathe a bit, because I think you brought it up in the preview that it was Drew McIntyre's title reign hasn't really been that great. I mean, I think most of us rate McIntyre as a talent and as a performer, but it's not really been that well booked. But if they're trying to build Almas into the next Mexican superstar to either replace Rey Mysterio or Del Rio, which isn't that hard on the latter. If they're trying to build him up, I mean, he has seemingly performed recently. I mean, I think he had a couple of good matches with Johnny Gargano. He had a decent match against McIntyre, as I said. I think they're doing well building him up, and hopefully Drew's back sooner than later and build this feud up, because I think it was weird, because I think the Undisputed Era were originally in the title picture, and then they kind of moved over to a feud with Roderick Strong. So it'll be interesting to see where they go from that. And on the women's one, I think Ember Moon was the safe choice. I'm not, if it's the right one, time will tell. I probably wanted Nikki Cross to win, but maybe they just didn't want all the titles on Sanity. But I think Ember Moon's a good choice. She clearly has a talent, as shown in the Oscar feud.
Yeah, that's certainly true. And she was, I think a natural time had come, and it was, perhaps risky not to take this opportunity to put it on her, you worry that you've got to a tipping point, and you don't want to tilt too far down the other way. So more, do you feel that the time was right for the title to be put on Ember Moon? And thoughts on the title change for Almas?
Yeah, I mean, with Ember Moon winning the title, I mean, that's something I've got no problem with. As we talked about a couple of weeks ago, she had some very good outings with Asuka earlier this year, and really came across well, especially at the TakeOver event in the night before WrestleMania back in April. And, she made it look really, really close to her, you know, walking away with that title and finally ending the title reign for Asuka. So her winning the title in front of a home hometown audience was a good moment and a bit of a surprise because, as we've talked about in the past, WWE rarely puts talents over when they're in front of their hometown crowd. So that was still nonetheless very good to see. And as for Almas, you know, he's somebody who has a lot of natural talent, but hasn't quite shown it in NXT up until more recently, where, you know, he's been putting together a more consistent run. Previously, he'd have, on and off kind of performances, some pretty good outings, some good matches, and then some others where he looked very, very ordinary. So the fact that they've put the title on him at last, bit of a surprise. I thought McIntyre would hold it, the title, for a bit longer. It might suggest that they've got plans to move McIntyre up to the main roster sooner or later, and we could see him up on the main roster as early as January around
Free
the Rumble time.
Free man band, baby.
It might just be that the injury was something that they actually he carried into the match, and it just kind of a position that was forced upon them. Is that a possibility?
Well, judging by his reaction towards the end of the match, it seemed like it was something that occurred during the match, right? Mm. But I mean, it might have been that he carried a strain going into the match, and it was further aggravated, and it was a full-blown bicep tear. I don't think that's been confirmed as yet, his reaction towards the end of the match, he looked very, very frustrated, if not angry, about the fact that he'd hurt himself. So it seemed like that had happened during the match. It was slightly a surprise. But, I mean, again, with Almas, he's a very good talent. And let's see where they go with the title. So, it's
a memorable event.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's another good takeover show. And we'll obviously have another one ahead of the Royal Rumble that weekend. And, these people, you know, they set a standard now. We've been seeing really, really good takeover events for the last several years. And all the talent know that this is their chance to shine, to really show what they are capable of. And, invariably they do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that takes us nicely on then to the main show of the weekend, the Survivor Series Sunday night. Again, I mean, this is one that we were looking forward to for, you know, a variety of reasons. Such a stacked card, as we spoke about last week in the preview. You know, there's just so much there, you know, so many potential great matchups. And Guy, I'll come to you first on this, because we spoke about the two tag team matchups as the matches that potentially really could steal the show. Of the two, I mean, do you feel that they did that? And was the one of the two that you think did, you know, was better than the other?
I think the main event stole the show for the wrong reason, if you get me. But yeah, these two were definitely the best wrestling matches of the night, 100%. I thought both could have been better, but that's to do with obviously storytelling and feud, which obviously you need a different pay-per-view than Survivor Series for. But both of them were really good. I thought the Usos versus the Bar was better. I think it was just structured better, and I like the finish a bit more. Whereas I think the ending to the Shield New Day match was a bit messy, if I remember correctly, where it was a bit random.
What you've mentioned there is that they could be better, and I think that's a fair point, because I think this is where you do notice that, you know, that these guys have not been working with each other, mm-hmm. you know, like at house shows week in, week, or almost night in, night out, you know, and polishing their matches up. This is, you know, coming together, having been away from each other. And I think that showed a little bit, but on the whole, yeah, it just really, really impressive for matches. And again, as you mentioned in there, you know, the Uso one, Usos again, the you know, they've really elevated their in-ring craft, haven't they?
They don't do bad matches, do they? I mean, either do the Bar. I mean, we said it on the preview, these are the two probably most informed tag teams of the last year, 6 months, whatever. If they end up on the same show at some point, that is a feud I'd love to see. Get the same treatment that New Day versus the Usos got, because it could top anything, because they're the two best tag teams in the company for me at the moment, and I think the only people who could probably top them is the Revival when they actually like are alive.
Stop getting injured.
Yeah,
stop
pretty much.
Getting injured.
Pretty much, yeah. But yeah, them two were the best matches of the night. It was a bit weird. The New Day one was a bit weird because of that. I can't remember the ending, but didn't they like do like four finishes in like 3 seconds after having like a massive build up to something? Nothing
after. Yeah, it was a bit more cartoony. I mean, more. Would you go along with Guy in terms of the two tag team matches? Would you pick the Bar and Usos ahead of Shield? New Day.
Well, I thought the Shield against the New Day actually was a really good match. Very, very good opener. Went quite long, actually. Went over 20 minutes, which is quite rare for an opening match. Obviously, it was the opening match of the main card. We had three matches on the pre-show, but you know, for a opening match on the main show, quite a lengthy match, but in the end, turned out really good, very strong finish to it. So it was something I was very impressed with. The other match, the Usos against Cesaro and Sheamus, was also very, very good. I thought it was just slightly below the level of the opening match between the New Day and the Shield. But no, I thought both matches were very, very good. And you know, it was something that I was certainly looking forward to. I thought Usos and Bar would be a really, really top match, and probably be better because both teams have been, you know, as Guy is saying, on fire this year. So it was still very, very good though, and you know, they were two of just several really good matches on the card. So you know, that was very pleasing to see.
Yeah, that's it. This is a good thing that there was a lot of good action throughout the card, and we said, you know, it's a stacked card, and sometimes, as we found with WWE events on the main roster this year, it's been slightly bizarre where the build up has not been good, and we're thinking we're not particularly looking forward to the event and not all that enthused. They've actually turned out to be really good shows, and where the ones what we've kind of been looking forward to and they've been built up really well, they've kind of flattered us even and disappointed us. But I think this one obviously was really, really built up heavily, but certainly I would say delivered. I mean, what about the women's championship fight off then between Charlotte and Alexa Bliss? I think this was again evidence of how far Alexa Bliss has come, because I thought this was a really good match.
To be honest, I didn't.
a classic, but but a good match.
Yeah, it was certainly not a bad match or a poor match. I thought it was perfectly solid, but it wasn't quite the level of some of the matches that we've seen Charlotte produce against Sasha Banks in particular on the main roster. You know, she's had a bit of a lackluster year by her high standards as Charlotte. So I thought, well, okay, this is a really good chance for her to go out and show that, you know, she can work a really excellent match with somebody other than, you know, the usual suspects. And Sasha Banks is the opponent that she has normally had the best matches with on the main roster. And they were given enough time. It's not as if they were only given 7-8 minutes to go out there and rush through a match. They had close to 60 minutes, but it really didn't quite hit the heights that we've seen some of the better Charlotte matches hit. So From that perspective, I was disappointed, but that was more because I went into it with very, very high expectations, going into it just letting them do what they can do and seeing what comes out of it. So I thought, yeah, it was fine, but it didn't quite hit the spots for me.
And Guy, have I been a bit too generous here then? I thought it was quite a good match. I guess I didn't go in with like particularly high expectations as such, because I'm certainly not expecting any kind of classics from Alexa Bliss. But I just thought she held herself, she held her own in there against Charlotte.
Yeah, I thought it was good. I mean, if we're going to do star ratings, probably 3.5. Probably maybe on the generous side of that, but I thought it was good. I think on the preview we talked about Alexa being the pretender to the throne, or at least story-wise, line, not performance-wise. And I think that kind of showed in the match. I think obviously Alexa set the tempo of the match and all that. I think that was to try and make her look strong. And I think that's the I know she lost and all that, and she was in, well, looked like tears at the end. But I think that's what it did. I think it made... It legitimised Alexa Bliss. Obviously, she's been on Raw and worked with Sasha, Bayley, etc. But obviously, Charlotte is the main deal. Well, as Mo said, she's had a bit of a underwhelming run on SmackDown. But I think this match did its job. It made Alexa Bliss look like a proper champion, a proper talent. And maybe next year a bit more development in the ring. She'll be winning one of these big feuds on Survivor Series if she's still in the title picture. But yeah, I think it did its job and it was entertaining. You can't really ask for much more. I mean, if we wanted WrestleMania level match, I mean you'd probably be having Becky Lynch in the SmackDown spot, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think that's a fair point.
I forgot Charlotte was on SmackDown. Anyway, you'd put someone else in the Raw.
I knew what you meant, yeah. Don't worry. Yeah. So, I mean, Becky Lynch there, I mean, it's a nice little segue for us then. So what of the traditional Survivor Series matches for the women's side? I've got to say, the first thing that struck me was, what was the point in having an unnamed member only for it to be Natalya? What on earth was the point in that?
I don't know. Maybe Paige got lost in traffic or something. It was really stupid, wasn't it? I mean, even it's the fact that it's Natalya as well. Nobody gives a fuck. To be harsh, nobody gives a toss, do they? I don't know if they had something else planned or something and it backfired, but it was such a stupid idea if it was Natalya from the start. But it was just a really weird thing. And the match itself wasn't great.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And what I was going to say, an underwhelming moment followed by what was a fairly underwhelming match. I mean, we said, you know, there was a lot of good action on this card. This wasn't really one of it. It was, I mean, traditional Survivor Series matches, they're not sort of necessarily in line with having, you know, a great match because there's so many people involved in the in and outs and all the rest of it. But this wasn't particularly great. And more, I mean, can you make sense of why you would have, you know, announce your fifth member, keeping it a secret, only for it to be Natalya? I can't quite get my head around that one. And other than this match being really to elevate, is not the right word. I say probably further cement the status of Asuka on the Raw side of things. It just didn't do anything for me.
Yeah, no, it was a very up and down match. It did have lows, especially when Naomi and Alicia Fox were together. They were, never mind, not on the same page. They were not even on the same planet. Completely blowing spot after spot. Very, very awkward exchanges between the two. Match almost broke down when they were together. So that was very, very sloppy. It's very rare to see that in WWE matches these days. But that was very, very poor. It was a match which, again, did have individuals in it that could have put together a really good match, but there was also a lot of deadwood as well. Likes Alicia Fox, she's good at pulling off certain moves, but isn't a good worker. Naomi's up and down. Tamina, I have no idea at all why on earth she's in this company. There's hundreds of women out there that are significantly better
workers.
She can
do a super kick.
Well,
almost.
Yep.
Almost.
In all seriousness, she must. I'm guessing she carries a pretty bad knee injury or something because she struggles to get around the ring.
Yeah. She's not over. Nobody cares when she comes out.
No.
She's got no charisma. She can't work. There's just nothing about her. I mean, even for the fans that just want to treat the female workers as eye candy in that kind of outdated view of what women wrestlers are, she perhaps doesn't even tick that box. I really don't know exactly what it is that she's on the roster for, other than
put Lana with her.
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to get some comedy mileage out of it, but that's failing as well. So, yeah. But then obviously we've got new girls that have come in this week on SmackDown, which we'll talk about in a bit. But that all just adds to the argument for just removing her and, giving that precious TV time to people that are far more deserving of it. But, it was just underwhelming, to say the least.
Yeah. Another underwhelming match, I've got to say, was the US champ v. Intercontinental champ, Baron Corbin against Miz. A match that I wasn't looking forward to. Baron Corbin matches I just straight out don't look forward to anyway. It happened. It was what it was. I don't think, is there any other way of putting that?
It lived up to its billing as being my piss break. And that it was.
Well, minutes, if that's your piss break, I've got to know what you're drinking.
I think I went a bit longer just to avoid that match.
Yeah, I mean, with this one then, Baron Corbin obviously is somebody that was Mr. Money in the Bank, cashed in and obviously didn't come out winning the title.
Mr. Overdrawn.
Thank Christ for that.
Overdrawn, not so much money in the bank.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, it was clearly a sign that he'd fallen out of favour at that point with the company. But this, if anything, was a suggestion that he's back in the good books because he got a clean win over The Miz. So, and obviously the Miz has been in very fine form this year. So the fact that Corbin was put over the Miz, who's been a model pro for many years, and as I say, has been in very, very fine form throughout 2017. That was somewhat of a surprise, but that perhaps suggests that they've got some, well, they've resurrected their big plans for Corbin, let's just put it that way. So that was good for Corbin, less so for the Miz, who again, jobbed the very next night on Raw. So, yeah, cut a good promo on Raw, but jobbing in these matches perhaps show that the company doesn't have immediate plans to elevate him much beyond the level he's already at.
No, I'll be honest. I've never been a great fan of The Miz. I don't think his in-ring work is fantastic at all. I think he's a good worker, but I think what he does is very reliable in terms of his... He knows he's got his character off now. He delivers good promos. He consistently delivers good promos.
I do think his match with Roman Reigns, to be fair, was probably his best since his Dolph Ziggler feud. His much-loved Dolph Ziggler feud. Just to be fair to him, but yeah, the sorry to jump in, but yeah, the Corbin match was shit.
Yeah, but I think what he's a very reliable. It's almost the Ric Flair of the mid card. You know, the guy who can talk and
he can
traditional
carry the title as well.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, he'll carry the title, put people over. You know, people want to see him get beat. Very reliable in that sense. So, yeah, I guess it made in the grand scheme of things for the event. I guess it made sense.
It was the one match he was the favoured one.
Well, I mean, another title. You know, the other title match on there, WWE title versus Universal title. Now, obviously, when it was Jinder and Brock, we weren't particularly looking forward to that. But we spoke last week, Guy, and we were intrigued to see how this would be handled. You know, we obviously worried. You know, that we didn't want it to be a squash match, and it certainly, although it started off as though it potentially could be, I liked in the grand, you know, in the bigger picture as it became. I like how they did that to start with, because it. For the storyline of the actual match itself, that kind of made sense, and it just developed and developed and developed, and in the end, I thought it was a fantastic match. I just thoroughly enjoyed the story that both AJ Styles and Brock Lesnar told in this match.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we were talking about the two tag team matches being the best on the night. I mean, this was right up there with them. Unexpectedly, I mean, we know AJ Styles is the best worker in the company, and Brock Lesnar is very talented when he wants to be. Fortunately, this was one of the nights where he wanted to work. At the start, I was worried it was going to be a squash match, and it must have been a good 3 or 4 minutes where it was like, oh God, this is going to end in a second. As you said, the storytelling and the development of the quality throughout the match. I'm not sure how long it went for, but it seemed well paced. It seemed pretty much perfect. I think we all knew Brock Lesnar was winning, but it did wonders for AJ Styles to be legitimised against the unstoppable force. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing that again on a bigger stage.
Yeah, that itself is a great point. I mean, Mo, is this a match you'd like to see again? Because I'm with Guy. I'd love to see this again. I mean, for me, this was 15 minutes of well-developed storytelling. You know, that old sort of classic David versus Goliath, and you know, we had Brock Lesnar selling out. You know, out of the ring, going up the ramp after the match. You know, what more do you need?
Absolutely, and you know, there are people out there that talk about Brock Lesnar not being a good worker and say that all he does is suplexes, and people who say that really don't understand how wrestling works. He's such a smart worker because he's now somebody who's got an aura, and you know, when you have an aura and when you've got this presence and you're seen as a really legitimate main event headline act, and also somebody that fans generally perceive as being a genuine tough guy. To go out there and bump for every opponent would help to very, very quickly dilute that kind of aura and that star presence. So people like that, people like Brock Lesnar, have to protect that and be very careful and selective about who they show vulnerability to. And that's why when he does show that vulnerability, when he does sell, it means something. So when he did that with Goldberg, when he did it at points this year with Braun Strowman, it really got a reaction and it got people really interested in his matches with those individuals, because it was something different to what we normally see from him. And it was a sign of massive respect from Brock that he was willing to sell to a guy that's a good 6-7 inches shorter than him and about 100 pounds lighter. And this is something that we've talked about before, that Brock perhaps is reluctant to sell to people that are much smaller than him. He thinks it doesn't look realistic. Well, the fact he was selling like crazy to for AJ Styles' offense was a really big sign of respect that, you know, we think this guy is a real deal. And it also perhaps played into it that both are former IWGP champions in New Japan Pro Wrestling. It was good to see, and it made it all the more better, because had it been a typical Brock match where he comes in for 5 minutes, run roughshod, 10 suplexes, and the match finishes, it would have not really done either one any favours. But by working it in this very clever way, it made AJ Styles come across like a bigger star than he already is. And it also made people a bit more excited to see Brock again, because we've seen matches from him where, you know, we've had exciting matches, even the ones with Goldberg, but this was a more conventional type of match with old school psychology, as you say, big man versus little man, and he showed a different side to what we normally see from him, and it worked perfectly.
Yeah, and Paul Heyman went out of his way to really pay respects to AJ Styles. For me, that I know Paul Heyman's there to sell matches, certainly to sell tickets beforehand, but, you know, going out of his way afterwards, you know, describing him as the best worker in the world, you know, for me, it speaks volumes.
Yeah, yeah. We certainly would have done that for Jinder Mahal had that original match gone through.
How much influence do you think Heyman has over Lesnar in terms of working with his opponent? I mean, we obviously saw his match with Samoa Joe a couple of months ago. I mean, that was a lot shorter, but I mean, that is a time slot that probably would have been a squash match normally. But do you think Heyman has had words with Lesnar saying work with him a bit more? Do you think that is something? I'm not sure how much in ITK stuff you get more.
I think that, certainly Brock respects the hell out of Heyman. I mean, even when he was away from the WWE, they would talk regularly. And, in real life, he does get advised by Paul Heyman. And so when Paul Heyman says to Brock, look, you know, this guy is a heck of a talent, then it will resonate with Brock. And I mean, it's not as if they went into this match and they talked about, well, yeah, AJ Styles is a good worker. I mean, Brock Lesnar knows who AJ Styles is. He's seen his work. As I say, both have been former IWGP champions in New Japan. And that earned some respect with Brock straight away. And, I think there's certainly some influence from Heyman for sure. But I think Brock Lesnar is also somebody that is smart to the business and sees that AJ Styles isn't just your average run-of-the-mill type of workers. He's a very special talent. Yeah, absolutely. And he's got something about him, and he's a genuine top worker. And this match was a very, very smartly worked match and showed, as I say, due respect from Brock to AJ. And as you say, it'd be really good to see that match again, and be very interesting to see how they work it again. It'd be nice to see him do something different as well, just to make things interesting and keep us guessing about what the outcome might be.
It makes well, we had think, the little line from there. If he could work with Finn as well. Sorry to jump in, Andy.
That's all right. I was just going to say, you know, we had that little line from AJ Styles on SmackDown, you know, that people said about, you know, Rocky, well, you know, and Rocky 2, Rocky 1. So I think there's a little hint there that we may get something again in the future, and that would be good. Just on that, more than from what Guy mentioned, that I'd be keen to get your thoughts on that as well, actually. Finn Balor and Brock Lesnar, do you think that can happen?
Well, it could happen. But as we've seen from the way that Balor's been booked in recent months, it has not been very good booking at all. In fact, you could argue that the way that he's been booked couldn't have been any worse. He was booked in that horrendous feud with Bray Wyatt that just never ended. And it made him look like a very uninspiring kind of mid-card act rather than like a headline act.
Like a pumpkin.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it. And, you know, furthermore, he was exposed in terms of his weaknesses by having to go out there and cut these very fake, contrived, long promos that didn't suit him. He's not a good promo anyway, but if he's given the right kind of promo, which is short and sharp and snappy, he can still come across as a competent promo, but, you know, he wasn't allowed to do that. You know, that kind of special aura about him when he first debuted on the main roster and he won the Universal Championship is largely gone, unfortunately. So I think it will take some time to build that back up. And he'd be a great opponent. I think he could have a really good match, work with Brock Lesnar in much the same way as AJ did the other night. But as I say, he seems to be an act that Vince and others perhaps are not so keen on at this point in time. So it might be that he has to wait his turn to try and get back into the good books and get elevated further up. And I mean, he's not the only one. I mean, you look at people like Seth Rollins. You know, he was the focal point of Raw for quite a long time. And now he's just part of a reformed three-person unit. And he's just another guy. And he was
a focal point of Raw. I miss heel Rollins. He was so good.
Yeah.
Oh, so, they might well return.
Yeah. But you know, if anyone is deserving of you know, a feud with Brock, who perhaps is a fresh opponent from the usual two or three, I'd actually argue for Seth. Obviously, he's got a break up with the Shield first of all. Oh, sorry, split up with them again before he can have a meaningful program with Brock.
Yeah, we'll to us. That will come, I'm sure that will come at some point, and hopefully they'll do it ready for a WrestleMania match as well, so we'll get to that. That just leaves us with the last match on the card, and I've left it to the end, not because it was the best or anything like that, because I'd say actually far from it. It was a match that, for me, was a real border frustration, because this was kind of... really kind of gripe me, actually. We had Shinsuke Nakamura, Bobby Roode getting eliminated in the first two guys out, and we end up with all these old people, the old part-timers and whatnot, towards the end. Randy Orton in right near the end, and I just think, for me, what the hell was the point of Randy Orton being in there towards the end? Surely you would flip that spot around, you know, give it to Nakamura. Keep Nakamura in there longer. Let him get the rub of beating some of those guys and then being the one that's distracted and beaten by Braun Strowman in a way that doesn't hurt him at all. I don't know. I mean, maybe it's, you know, the hardcore, you know, internet wrestling fan of me or whatever the hell it is. But this match, the way it was booked, it just frustrated the hell out of me. It really did.
Yeah, the booking was very bizarre. I don't know how they could have sat in a room planning this match out and thinking, right, this ending, that would be fantastic. It will really get the crowd going. It did the complete opposite. The fans couldn't have been less impressed by what they saw. Very flat finish. Bit of a surprise, obviously. Kind of a double swerve, like 1 minute it looks like he's signing with Shane, and then he obviously turns on him, pedigrees him, and wins the match for himself. After costing Kurt Angle a pinfall victory over Shane. Submission victory. It all seemed a bit bizarre. Maybe on paper it seemed like a good idea, but in practice it just didn't work at all. But it was somewhat of a redemption at the end with Strowman then putting his hands on Triple H and taking care of him. But it was just a match that didn't work. It had enough individuals there that if it was booked in the right kind of way, they could have done something really quite smart, even though most of the people in the match were or are on the older side and not much in the way of fresh young talent. And it's something that was a bit of a missed opportunity in my view.
Yeah, and Guy, maybe you can help me out. What the hell was the point of John Cena in this match?
That's a good question.
He
didn't even come out in a blue shirt.
Well, if you mix blue and red together, you get green, don't you?
Oh, dear me.
Have I cracked it?
It's like Year 7 Artless.
But really, I mean, apart from having his name on the card and all the rest of it, what the hell was the point of him being there? It just did nothing. It wasn't for him to give the rub to someone or anything. It just did nothing.
I can't even remember. Who was he eliminated by? Angle? I can't remember. It was utterly pointless, and you could probably say the same about Randy Orton. At least Triple H and Angle had some kind of story involvement. He was absolutely pointless being there, and I don't know how much difference he'd make in terms of selling tickets or selling pay-per-views or subscriptions, whatever the hell it's judged on nowadays. But if it's a match that's got Shane McMahon, Triple H and Kurt Angle, if you need John Cena, I know John Cena's this generation's bloke, but it's got two legends and the most popular part-timer ever. Surely you don't need Cena for that.
For a stadium of 14,000 people, you know, it just, I don't know, it bemused me.
Yeah.
And another thing on this as well is, you know, we spoke about last week, didn't we, is the opportunity is there for Sami Zayn and for Kevin Owens to come in and cost SmackDown the match. And that would be, you know, they don't have to be on the card in the event. They just come out, cost them the match. And that is, you know, bigger than any match they could be on in it, really. So they come out, they distract them a bit, but then they get bolted to a chair. So their involvement in the match was pretty much meaningless as well.
It was horrendous, wasn't it? And then on SmackDown, they're trying to build it as that Randy Orton's furious that he cost them the match. I mean, Randy Orton wasn't even distracted. I don't know if he sold it wrong or whatever, but Randy Orton wasn't even distracted by them. He just got smashed by Braun Strowman. It was just stupid. It really made Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn look weak. It made Shane McMahon look stupid. Randy Orton was just as pointless as Cena, wasn't he? Apart from that, he's there full-time. It was just a really messy match. But the worst thing about that match for me is that it started off really well. You had Nakamura in the ring with Triple H and it was getting a reaction. You had Bobby Roode in the ring with Triple H, it was getting a reaction. And then 3 minutes later, they're out of the match.
That's the thing that really bugs the life out of me. You know, a chance to elevate new names and instead, you know, we had Nakamura, Roode and Samoa Joe, the first three gone. And then Finn Balor was gone after Cena. So we ended up with Randy Orton, Kurt Angle, Shane McMahon, Triple H, and of course Braun Strowman. You know, the one good thing from this is it really solidified Braun Strowman.
Did he need solidifying? I know he may have suffered a little bit after Brock, but did he? Did you really need to do a whole Survivor Series match to try and get Braun over, even though he's probably one of the most over people on Raw?
Yeah.
I
see this as a missed opportunity to really push Nakamura further and maybe get, you know, help push Rude a bit more. And I think it was a missed opportunity here and more comeback. Yeah. For me, I just can't get away from it. I thought it was just dreadful booking. It was really, really poor, short-sighted booking. And like you said, the only positive I can get from this match really is Braun Strowman.
Yeah, I mean, clearly the intention of the match was to put over Braun Strowman even more than he was coming into the match. And the focal point was squarely on Strowman. And that's fine. But then, you know, they should still be able to, within the confines of a 30 plus minute match, do stuff to get some of the others over. You know, perhaps use it to give, you know, Finn Balor some much needed momentum. But they didn't take that opportunity, and he was just there to make up the numbers essentially. And you know, that's why, you know, it was just very odd. It was quite bizarre. It almost felt like they came up with a bunch of ideas and creative for that match because of the different number of people involved, and they couldn't come to an agreement. And they ended up with some very last-minute hodgepodge, garbled compromise with Vince making the ultimate call. And then they came out to execute what was agreed. And what they executed was just very confusing and not very coherent. And so it was disappointing because it ended the Survivor Series on a flat note when the card up until that point had overall been very, very strong. And the weekend as a whole had been very strong. So that was a disappointing end to an otherwise pretty, pretty decent show.
It only makes sense if Braun and Triple H have a match, though, surely, doesn't it? I mean, it was a good moment for Braun, but for one 30
WrestleMania?
Can you really build Triple H as a threat to Braun Strowman?
Well
they could.
If it's up to Triple H, you will.
Yeah.
Get that, you know, he'll go into, you know, 2000 Triple H Cerebral Assassin mode, and you know, he'll try and make it seem like, you know, he's elevating Braun, but you know, Triple H went into that match looking quite old.
Yeah, he did.
I mean, he might still have a good physique and everything, but facially he looked. I mean. My younger son watched the match, and he said, "Is Triple H 60 years old?" he's not quite that old, but he looked very, very old now facially. You can certainly argue he really shouldn't be carrying on for much longer in the ring. Even though, as a worker, I mean, he certainly doesn't look like a completely washed up goon.
No,
he should only work for smaller guys. Sorry,
yeah, I think he's 48 or 49. He's not even 50. So, you know, he can still go for a number more years if he wants to as a part-timer working a couple of matches a year. But, you know, he's got other roles to fulfill within the company. And, you know, this is the time really that the company should be focused on elevating the younger talent. And even the younger talent are not that young. I mean, people like Nakamura and Bobby Roode, they're in their late 30s, you know, Samoa Joe, all these guys, they're coming towards 40 years of age. You know, they're becoming middle-aged men. You know, the talents that are there ready to be put over is the superstars, the main event acts of tomorrow. And, They should instead be having all of these people established by now as faces of Raw and SmackDown, and then bringing through younger talents in their 20s and early 30s to become the top stars of the next several years. So, you know, and the irony of it is that when they were in the Monday Night Wars with WCW, they regularly criticised WCW for being where the old boys play, and yet, you know, here we are 20 years later, and that's exactly what WWE has become.
Yeah. Yeah, somebody could make them mold. Do you remember the Hulk Hogan and Nacho, the Huckster and the Nacho Man advert, spoof adverts? Yeah. They could be making them.
Hogan and Roddy Piper had a match, cage match at Halloween Havoc 96 or 7, which I think Shawn Michaels referred to as Age in the Cage. So, yeah, these things come back to haunt you, ladies and gentlemen. And, WWE is kind of being exactly the thing that it once criticised many years ago. And that's a place where the old boys play.
Well, I mean, we're talking of progressing then and moving up. I mean, you alluded it to earlier on then. So we did get some call-ups immediately following Survivor Series from NXT, all on the women's side of things. An old guy will be happy. Monday night saw the return of Paige, and she brought with her Sonya Deville and Mandy Rose. You were pleased with that one, Guy?
Hell yes.
And not just because it's Paige.
Especially because it's Paige. It was a bit random, but I think it really worked. I mean, we were talking in the WhatsApp group that we weren't really expecting Paige to get that good a reaction. It really did work. I mean, I'm not going to lie, I didn't know too much about the other two, but it really did work, and it should help a stagnated women's division. That's on both shows. The long-awaited return for me, and it added a new dynamic that I didn't really see coming.
And more on SmackDown, we then got to Ruby Riott with Liv Morgan and someone else whose name escapes me, I'm afraid, because I can only recall her seeing her once before. But, you know, and again, three new names on the roster, a bit of reinvigoration, but what disappointed me somewhat, it was pretty much the same storyline.
Yeah, so obviously they attacked Alexa Bliss and I think it was Becky Lynch backstage. And, yeah, essentially the same storyline. And maybe there was something wider at play whereby they're a faction of six who split into two, trying to achieve the same thing on both brands. So maybe it was by design that that's how it all played out. But if it wasn't that, then it was just lazy storyline booking, because they could have, I mean, it shouldn't have been that difficult to come up with something slightly different to introduce Ruby Riott and co. than copying the exact same angle from the night before with Paige and co. And Paige, I think, is now single, Guy. So we're back in with a chance.
I've just gotta be Mexican and be a bit of an arsehole now.
So yeah, it's good though. You're quite right, Andy. You know, we've criticised the women's divisions, certainly the SmackDown one, for lacking freshness and vibrancy, and I think it will certainly have some of that with Ruby Riott in particular coming onto the SmackDown roster. And Paige, we'll have to see how she goes. I thought in her final few months before she disappeared while she was on Raw, she wasn't really impressing me all that much. I thought she was going through the motions. So I'm hoping that the time away and with all the other trials and tribulations she's gone through, she's regained her hunger for the business and for wrestling. And you know, we'll see in the coming weeks and months just how much of it she's gotten back, and you know, if she's at the top of the game, she'll certainly be a valuable addition to what's starting to become somewhat of a stacked women's division on Raw.
Yeah. Well, guys, I mean, we've gone through the lot. We've covered quite a lot there. Certainly, it was a big weekend of action. You know, so many matches, two big events. On the whole, thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle from you guys.
Big thumbs up from me.
Yeah, I've got to go thumbs up. And the only other thing that we haven't mentioned is that Roman Reigns achieved the Grand Slam of titles with winning the IC Championship, beating The Miz in the main event of Raw. And, you know, he actually got a pretty decent reaction as well. Certainly better than he's had for much of 2017. So maybe reforming the Shield with Ambrose and Rollins has certainly helped him to get back into the good books of certain sections of the crowd.
He's got to win the Universal title, hasn't he, for a proper one?
Well, I've got to say, I thought he looked genuinely delighted to win that title. Mm. You know, like he looked, there was genuine sort of warmth there, and dare I suggest that the reason that the Shield have actually been reformed is just purely to try and get him over with the crowd.
Well, you'd have to think so, wouldn't you?
Cynical me. Cynical me. Anyway, that wraps up this edition of the Pro Wrestling Index here on the Anfield Index podcast channel. My thanks to Mo Chatra and to Guy Drinkle for helping to guide us through all the action at Survivor Series and, of course, at War Games 2. So, and our thanks to all of you, the listeners, the lovely listeners, for tuning in and hitting that download button each and every week. If you want to keep in touch with us, you can at PW_index on Twitter. But until next time, from me, Andy Wales, it's bye-bye now.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.